There's something weird sleeping in your bed.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me, as always, we have Amanda Waltz.
Hello, Brian.
Hello. And we have Bill Graham.
Woo!
How are we all doing today?
Groovy.
Groovy.
I'm all hopped up on caffeine. Just went to the gym.
So you got some roid going on.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
I basically went to the gym because I watched Batman vs. Superman, the ultimate.
Ooh.
That sounds more like running a marathon to me, Bill.
It was very much
high
like
an endurance marathon.
Long, arduous, and not rewarding.
That is something that we'll be able to apply to two movies we're talking about today.
And I didn't get a t-shirt.
Oh. All right, well, we will be talking to Bill about his thoughts on the Ultimate Edition of Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. That will be one of Bill's famed two-minute reviews. And we're going to be talking about the newest film from director Paul Feig, that is Ghostbusters.
I'm sure no one has heard of this movie.
What?
No, I'm sure no one has heard about this movie.
No. This movie definitely doesn't feel like it came out 4 years ago. Stars Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy. So we'll be talking about that. Before we get into that, let me remind everyone that you can email us at podcast@filmstage.com with any thoughts you may have on the episode. You can find us on Twitter @FilmStageShow and search The Film Stage Show on Facebook. You can also find these episodes posted on thefilmstage.com and you can comment there. I'm sure that there will be no reasons for anyone to comment on this episode, which will, I'm sure, be lacking in controversy, as all things surrounding this movie have been.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
it's pretty quiet.
I have to apologize. It's been a while since we did a full review. We did put out an interview and a roundtable, but that's what happens when one of the people on your podcast has a baby and the other two are terrible at scheduling.
Meh.
Yeah, no defenses there for anyone. So
nope.
That's that. Welcome back. We are back. How could we miss the cultural events of the summer? Bill Graham.
Yes.
Let's start off with yours.
Oh,
Zack
man.
Snyder's bigger, longer, uncut Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. I have two questions for you to start you off with, and then you can
yes,
say whatever you'd like.
Sure.
So, question number one, is it better than the theatrical version? Question number two,
if I hated the
theatrical version, should I bother seeing this one? Bill Graham, you have 2 minutes.
Okay, so first question is it better? Marginally better. Yes, it is better. I'm actually really surprised because I didn't feel like it was any all that much longer. There are some key scenes that are added in that actually make the film feel a little bit more cohesive. And one of the biggest complaints surrounding like the bullet controversy and why that was a narrative arc at all actually works into the film, and it's answered by the movie this time around. That sequence that could have answered that big like loophole question that's kind of like floats around the entire film, that could have taken 30 seconds. So I'm really not sure why they didn't just like, oh yeah, let's leave that in for like cohesiveness. That way nobody asked a question about that. And no, they didn't manage to do that. But yeah, there's supposedly 30 extra minutes, and I felt like there was like 5 extra minutes of just added material. I guess I just didn't notice the other material that was added because I guess there's seconds here and seconds there, and they end up adding to a whole. If you hated it originally, primarily because Jenna Malone's character was cut out, then you would be absolutely in love with this version because they have two whole sequences with her being a saucy like CSI detective working in a crime lab.
Saucy.
Yeah, saucy.
Saucier than the Neon Demon?
I was just getting to that. No. Do not twist my words. That is not what I mean.
Okay.
Yeah. Saucy in like the physical sense, or
she's literally covered in tomato sauce.
I wish.
2 minutes have come to an end, Bill. So yes. Why don't you give us your final verdict on this thing?
So, like, what does this ultimately tell us? What this ultimately tells us is that Zack Snyder desperately needs a second set of eyes to watch this film, and that way he can get feedback from someone besides the actual audience when he releases the film. Because otherwise, a lot of these things, like the small, like it's such a small thing, the bullet thing, and yet it just blows up the entire film. It makes it doesn't allow the film to make any sense whatsoever. And it's solved with like 30 seconds. And well, I just don't understand.
The problem with Jimmy Olsen getting shot is like, he said, oh, we had to cut it for time. Like, how long does it take for that character to say, hi, Lois, I'm Jimmy Olsen?
Oh, he introduces himself in this version. Yeah.
That's crazy. That's.
Wait, did they not introduce?
No.
I haven't seen this movie yet. Did they not introduce him? Does he just show up?
He's just a burly, like Zero Dark 30 looking cameraman.
Yep.
Who gets shot immediately.
And then in the credits, he's credited as Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah.
And
Zack Snyder said,
bro,
we were like looking at what we were going to do with this series, and there's just not a place for Jimmy Olsen. But we thought, let's have fun with the character. Zack Snyder's concept of fun is butchering someone.
Pretty much.
So, ladies, get in line. Yeah, gotta love that Zack Snyder. So that's BVS DOJ UE, I guess, Ultimate Edition. Add some more letters onto that acronym.
One thing I do want to mention real quick, and this will be my final thing. I did find it interesting that the Blu-ray, so they're stacked on top of each other. They have like little holster. They're right. Stacked on top of each other. Which one's the first one? Which one do y'all think is the first one on that little holder thing?
I'm going to say extended.
I would have to say extended if you're buying the extended edition.
False.
What?
False. Yes. So they want you literally to watch the original cut first and then be like, oh my God, there's a extended edition. Look at this.
Did you ever, this is a dumb side note, but that's what we thrive on here. Did you ever see the show Community?
Yes.
Where they talk about like the 4.5 hour long cut of The Dark Knight. With like optional commentary from like all the actors and everything.
What?
Yeah, I don't remember that one.
They made it up, obviously, for that. But the joke is that Alison Brie's character accidentally steps on it, even though it was like one of a kind and had been personalized by Christian Bale. And he apparently had a commentary track on this fictional edition. And Donald Glover's character, Troy, says to her, you can't magically fix this. Are you just gonna like pretend to be Christian Bale and record an entire like narrative track about this? And Alison Brie does a spectacular Christian Bale as Batman impression.
Wow.
I urge you all to look it up. Community, best show of the last decade, canceled before its time, 6 seasons and a movie. So that's all about that. Let's talk about the universally beloved, in no way controversial, new film that is in theaters now, and that is Ghostbusters. Novel title, never anything that we've heard of before. This is from director Paul Feig, again starring Melissa McCarthy. Here is the trailer.
For apparition. That's okay. She seems peaceful.
My name is Erin Gilbert, doctor of particle physics. That stuff went everywhere, by the way, in every crack. Very hard to wash off.
We have dedicated. So that is the trailer for Ghostbusters 2016. Remake? Reboot? No one's quite sure. Is the name Ghostbusters? Or is the name Ghostbusters Answer the Call? Again, I don't know if we'll ever have a clear answer. What we do know is that this was written...
You are the owl from the lollipop commercial right now. Yeah. Will we ever know?
How many licks does it take to get the center of a Tootsie Roll Pop? Do-do-do-do-do.
I think it's just Tootsie Pop. Never know.
No, it's a Tootsie Roll Pop.
I never say Tootsie Roll Pop. And
I think it's Tootsie Pop.
Okay, Tootsie Pop. You know what? You know what? I don't even know.
Starting off real
I don't even
well.
Know what to do right now. Because part of me wants to look this up. And I don't know what to do. There is a song for Tootsie Roll Pops ride. That says, like, something, something sure looks like a Tootsie Roll Pop to me. You know, it doesn't matter.
Oh, my God. We're
not going through
it.
We're talking about Ghostbusters. We're talking about Ghostbusters. This movie, directed, Paul Feig. Written, Kate Dippold, Paul Feig. Stars, Melissa McCarthy, Zach Woods. Why did he pop into my head first?
Kristen Woods?
Yeah, Zach Woods is in this.
I don't know who. Oh, is he the guy from
Silicon Valley? He's Jared.
Yes. Yes, I love him.
Oh, in the very beginning.
Yeah. I think that's why he popped into my head first. We also have Kate McKinnon, Leslie Jones, and Ed Begley Jr. shows up in this. So if you're a fan of him.
You are all over the place with this.
Whoa. How about we get a little Chris Hemsworth action in there? Come on.
We don't want to give away the best part of this movie right away. What? But yes, Chris
There's
Hemsworth
so
is
many,
in this.
There's so many. So many,
so many
people
Chris Hemsworths?
In this movie. So many people in this movie that are very unexpectedly show up.
Yes, including every living previous cast member of a Ghostbusters movie, with the exception of, and now I can't remember his name, Rick Moranis.
Well, he doesn't really do films anymore.
No, he doesn't. Though he's apparently looking to get back out there. So if you've got a script, Rick Moranis may be looking. So this
except if it's got Ghostbusters on it.
Yeah, he doesn't got time for that. So this movie, remake, obviously, of the original Ghostbusters that had Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd. And let's see what we thought about it. Let's see what we make of the new Ghostbusters. People already know about the controversy about this, right? We don't have to explain that. We don't have
Wait,
to give
the what now?
Context.
What?
The fact that this movie got made... pissed off most of the more vocal components of the internet because
I wouldn't say most of
okay a very
we'll
vocal
just
minority.
Say eight yes
well that's why
go.
I said the more vocal
right.
parts of the internet
right
because
right.
you know if you're a normal person I wouldn't call you a vocal part of the internet but yeah a lot of people who were very loud but not nearly as numerous as you might think probably
a lot of people with off. Like weird anime avatars.
You know, I used to think that that was just like a mean joke, but it's true. Many of them do have anime avatars. I don't know what that's all about in the culture, but
either.
Go for it. So people were pissed off, A, because you're remaking Ghostbusters, B, because they were all women. And one of those is fine. The other one is super dumb. I will let people figure out which one I think is which. And yeah, let's talk about this. Amanda Waltz.
Yes.
It's an all-females Ghostbusters team.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start off with you because that's just super predictable.
Oh, yeah, you What's know. Well,
as
I obviously
a,
love
as a woman
movie.
Who speaks for all women,
oh,
as
yeah.
I, well, I'm we, sure you hear all the time, what
we
did
had a
you,
meeting.
What did you yeah. and all women think of this Ghostbusters movie?
We had a meeting.
Okay, good.
Well, I would say more of a conference call. Only half of us could make it.
Right. you know women, always canceling plans.
Oh, well, you know us.
Did it start on time?
No, of course not, Bill. Come on.
A lot of us had mani-pedi appointments. It could not break.
Well, you know, that's why you don't schedule an all-women appointment for a Sunday, because if it's not the mani-pedis, it's going to be brunch.
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, and it was our obligation to love this movie, obviously.
You say
no.
that as a joke, but, like, for real, there have been a lot of think pieces.
I don't read think pieces, Brian.
I read the headlines of think pieces that people post on Facebook.
Oh, I do
Does
not read
count?
Think pieces. Absolutely not. No, I will say I'm just gonna go right off the bat and I'm just gonna say I'm in love, you guys. I am in love with Kate McKinnon.
Yes.
Okay. I can feel that.
I am having an emotional affair with Kate McKinnon.
via the screen.
I told my husband, I admitted it. She's weirdly sexy in this movie, and she looks like a punk Blossom with her outfits.
Someone posted a picture.
With a crop top?
Yeah.
I'm into it.
Someone posted a picture of her and said she should have been Joker.
Oh, she's... Oh, guys. I got a fever.
Oh, my God.
All right, I'll stop. But no, seriously, I'm kind of in love with her. So I'm just going to get that out of the way before I get into the real important stuff of this movie. One of the things I wondered about this film, and this is something with Paul Feig specifically, I do enjoy his movies. Anytime Spy comes on HBO, I have to watch it. Like, if I catch it, if I'm flipping the channels, I'll watch a couple minutes of it because I really like it. But one thing that I will say, he is not the greatest filmmaker. He's more content versus form. I mean, his movies are basically just joke delivery systems, which is not a bad thing. A
lot of mid shots.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Big time. A lot of like shot, reverse shot, very whatever kind of stuff, which is fine for the purpose of his films. But I wondered, because I watched Spy, and there are definitely, as much as I like that movie, there are definitely some fight sequences that I sort of cringe at because they're not that well edited. They're a little choppy. And the thing is like, that's a very high concept comedy, as is this, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, but this is a very visual film. So I really wondered if he was going to be able to pull it off. I think he does for the most part. I was expecting way worse, to be quite honest with you. I was. Okay. I'm going to admit it. I was expecting way worse in the visual department. I think he pulls it off. I will say that as much as I did enjoy this film, I definitely laughed out loud quite a bit. The first 15 minutes are pretty touch and go, except for the intro with who is it, Zach Woods?
Zach Woods.
That line about the anti-Irish security fence. I was like, all right, guys, we're off on a
of the three
good
times
start.
I laughed during this movie, that time was the first.
What was the other one about P.T. Barnum enslaving elephants?
Yeah.
Yes.
That was pretty good, too. That was like, all right, we're off on a good foot. Okay. But yeah, I will say the first 15 minutes are pretty touch and go. I really wasn't sure how I was going to feel about it. I did enjoy it. I thought this was a fun, enjoyable, you know, movie. It's not doing anything like really groundbreaking. I do think, and we'll discuss this later in terms of like how it compares to the first film. Not that it really matters to me, but I will say there are some bits that fell flat pretty hard. But I think that is just sort of goes with his type of comedy. And it's sort of the Judd Apatow type of comedy where it's not about like the joke and then the punchline. It's more, let's see how long we can keep this going until it gets strained. There were a couple moments where I was like, this can end now. We don't need to keep this up.
Yeah.
Chris Hemsworth, bless his heart. Bless his heart. He is wonderful in this movie. I will say Kate McKinnon is pretty great. She has a shtick for sure. I don't know if anyone watches SNL.
Yep.
She definitely has a certain type of shtick that works for her, and she does bring it to this movie. If you like that, you'll love this. You will absolutely love this movie. If you don't, I don't really know what to tell you.
Yeah, it's very dry humor.
It's like weirdo, but not weirdo in the like kooky. Like it's kooky, but not like.
I was about to say, you better walk that back because.
Never mind. Yeah, I was like, I think. Yeah, no, it's kooky, but not in the like Robin Williams like.
Not in a good way.
It's awkward. It's no, it's kooky in a good way. It's kooky in a good way, but some people just don't like it. Yes. I like it.
Well, some people like. I remember having a conversation with someone that was talking about The Office, the American version of The Office, and they said that they just couldn't watch it because of Michael. And
really?
I was like, Michael's the best part. And they were like, yes, I understand that that's his function, mm-hmm. but he's awkward. And that awkwardness makes me feel really awkward.
He is super
and
not
I can't
fun
watch.
To watch.
Yeah.
Well,
and so it's
that's the point of it. But sometimes people just can't take uncomfortable comedy.
Yeah.
I know,
yeah.
Like, I'm the same. I've heard a lot of people say the same thing, Bill. They just can't handle it. It just makes
I know
them
people
too
who
antsy.
Can't watch Meet the Parents for that same reason.
Meet the Parents?
Yeah, oh my God.
That's,
like every,
that's a weird one.
Every No, okay. I mean, if you think about that movie, like, it's nothing but Ben Stiller
it's
making an ass
awkward.
Of himself. And it's just hard to watch because you're like, oh no, please stop talking. Why are you pretending you used to milk a cat? And, I mean, like, it's just, it's hard to watch someone who you know is, like, inherently good-natured just make an ass of themselves.
Although that's, in terms of good-naturedness, I think that's arguable for Michael Scott.
Well, he believes that he's doing, I mean, he's not a Dwight Schrute, you know? He's not, why are we talking about The Office?
Yeah, we need to stop talking about The Office. But yeah,
it was working.
Chris Hemsworth is pretty great in this movie. He has some really, really great bits. I was surprised that Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig played it straight as much as they did.
Yeah, Wiig kind of is the type. Like I'm uptight sorry,
is it,
button.
Is it?
She's still doing
wig?
Her Wiig thing. She's
I always
stammery,
say
awkward. You know, talking and basically talking in a whisper the entire time, kind of very insecure. She still does that.
Yeah.
But I was just surprised that it was more Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig were sort of the straight men, and then you had Leslie Jones and Katie McKinnon being more of the goofballs.
Yeah.
Although that's maybe not goofball, but they're definitely the more.
They're
sort
the loud,
the bigger personalities.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I enjoyed this for the most part. Like I said, not every bit works, and that's fine. I will say that there were quite a few children in my theater who, after the movie, especially there were two little boys who said it was awesome. They loved it. And I had a moment where... No, I'll talk about it later. Never mind.
Okay. Bill Graham, what did you think of this film?
Ooh, okay. So
I mean, you had to have seen this coming.
Yeah. the first thing I want to say is that this film is a little bit too long. Any comedy that approaches the 2 hour mark is right at that moment where you're just like, okay, when is this going to end? And I think this is an hour and 51 minutes. So it's closing in on that mark.
Mm-hmm.
And you definitely feel it in the theater. It loses a little bit of its momentum. And I think part of it is because Feig has such a reverence for the original films and for the franchise as a whole, that he puts in a lot of needless callbacks and things like that. I mean, and at times they're funny, and at times they just mm-hmm. aren't necessary, and they feel placed. They feel like they we won't get into that yet, but there's a lot of sequences in this film that are just completely ripped from the original, even to down to some of the ways that like there's a human antagonist that's helping these ghosts, and you're like, oh, well, there was a human antagonist in the first film. And then there's a mayor or
there was a human antagonist in the first film.
Was there? I don't think that there in the second film there was.
We can talk about it a little bit later. But
Okay.
You'll have to enlighten me, Bill, because I just watched the original Ghostbusters like 2 days ago.
I literally don't remember
that
at all.
Yeah,
so the guy that builds the tower.
But I don't think
ago.
They ever established that he did that on purpose.
No. Oh, yeah. He definitely did it on purpose.
Okay, but there's. We'll
go into this.
About it.
Well, sure. let's put a pin in this.
Anyways, there's a lot of other. I mean, even the fact that Slimer shows up for completely unnecessary. He's not. And you know the big bad at the end, and it's just like, okay, why are we doing all of this over again? Is this a reboot? Is it a remake? I'm not sure, because there's just so many callbacks to the originals that it almost feels slavish to that. And I think mm-hmm. I think that hampers Feig in a little bit, and it makes his film a little bit overlong, and you feel that. That being said, I wasn't expecting to have two things happen. I wasn't expecting to fall in love with the effects in this film as much as I did. The ghosts, I think, look absolutely fantastic, especially the first apparition that you run into. Looks stunning. And I also love the proton packs in this film. They give them weight. They give them kind of this dangerous kind of idea that surrounds them. They make them feel very, very unwieldy and like they're experimental technology. And I think they do a really good job of that. The other thing that I wasn't expecting was to fall in love with the characters as much. I think there is something really, really central to this film about friendship and sticking together. When the whole world around you kind of doesn't believe you or, you know, mistrust you or things like that, there's a nice little core element that the film kind of has. And, you know, those are the kind of things that I wasn't expecting to find in this film. What I was expecting to find was a lot of jokes that work and don't, a lot of laughter, sure, and Kate McKinnon just nailing it. She really is kind of
yes, she is.
she's definitely one of the reasons to watch this film, to kind of get up ahead of the fact that she's probably going to turn into I wouldn't say a huge star, but probably a moderate star in the comedy mm-hmm. world. I can definitely see her branching off from here once a lot of people kind of recognize her face and things like that, outside of just the people that, you know, tune into Saturday Night Live, which has, you know, gone through its up and downs recently. And
I feel like she's the highlight. She's been the highlight for a while.
Yeah.
Like one of the highlights.
And it hasn't done much for her, right?
Yeah.
This is the first film where it's really kind of paying that off. And yeah, I mean, the film has a lot of trouble in just the way that, like I said, it's almost too slavish to the original, and yet I still feel like he has a lot of fun. And it was just enjoyable, but yeah, it's just too long. Just too long. That's it.
Feel that way.
That's all I got. That's all I got, man.
Yeah, I didn't like this movie in the least. wow, what a poorly constructed, lazily written, choppily edited, unfunny, just waste of time. Like, you know, there's a scene in this movie that I think sums up everything that's wrong with it. We have the Ghostbusters, all of whom have deep roots in New York, care deeply about the city. There's a lot of, like, every movie since Batman, where people are like, we have to protect this city, like, this city needs us. They're all sitting around a table, talking about some stuff. I don't even remember what it was, because what does it matter? And they're eating pizza in New York. And it's Papa John's.
Oh my God, Brian, and, for real?
And what I'm going to say is that this whole scene is analogous to the entire movie. It's a pointless, commercial, thoughtless.
Yeah, because there was no product placement in the first movie.
I'm just saying, man, it's not recently, but I'm just saying, like,
there's a lot of product placement in the first one.
Utterly, utterly, utterly crass and pointless. And it's just like, it's not funny. Like, you said there were jokes in this. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, unless Chris Hemsworth saying dumb shit counts as a joke, this is a comedy the likes of which we've seen a lot recently. And there was actually an article in the 2011 New York Times Magazine entitled The Hangover and the Age of the Jokeless Comedy.
Yeah,
and that's
that.
what we're dealing with here.
There's
not a joke. It's someone will get slimed, and then someone will be like, well, you just got slimed. And they're like, I know, I totally got slimed. And then someone's like, remember when you got slimed? And then they'll talk about being slimed. Or like, two people will say the same thing at the same time, and then they'll kind of like pause and stutter and have a moment. And it's like, I guess if that happened to you and your friends, you'd like be like, remember that? But this is a movie. Like, you had time to construct jokes that would be funny, and instead you just kind of like sat around and did nothing. And you know, the ghosts are fine, I guess.
Yeah.
The first Ghostbusters actually won an Academy Award for best special effects because they invented new technologies to do their ghosts. And it's just sort of the problem with every big budget film nowadays, that it's all just CGI and nothing feels cool or special anymore. The powers of the villain make no sense. The story makes no sense. I mean,
didn't the first film like use CGI for the ghosts as well?
I don't know 100% what they did. I think they may have done like an overlay with a lot of matte painting.
Because the other thing about the first film,
I mean,
is
how
that
much CGI was there in like 1984?
Well, let's see. Tron was probably the first CGI film. So
yes, with major elements in it. Yeah.
I know that the what was it?
Well, Green Mouse Detective
was one of the first large scale uses of CGI in a non CG film.
Really?
Yeah.
The clock tower.
Yeah, y'all can you know, do some research while I talk, but like, let's be honest, some of the biggest characters in the first Ghostbusters film are not ghosts. They are demons. They are things like that in an actual physical form. So Sigourney Weaver, Rick Moranis, all of these people, Zool, things like that, they didn't have to create them. They didn't have to create them out of whole cloth. They were literally people.
Right,
you know, same with the
library ghost or Slimer, like these ethereal creatures that are superimposed onto
reality. This film has a whole lot more of them.
Yeah, right? Well, and they also use like Harryhausen type stop motion.
Yeah,
with
which looks creepy as shit.
I guess.
I love stop motion. You'll never be able to get me to say a bad thing about
Brian,
stop
we know. We already know. We already know both
Cobra
of our...
Cobra and the Two Strings! Coming out soon.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. I can't wait for that. Anyways, moving on.
This movie, it's just the same stuff that we've been seeing, and it's not particularly good. It rarely is onerously bad, but I mean, it feels fundamentally thoughtless and careless and pointless. Like, it's just not a good film. It's just a lot of the same crap that we see everywhere else, and it stopped being funny a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, this isn't a well-written film. This is not a film where the dialogue zings back and forth.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Well, I'm wondering how much of it was improv'd.
That's the problem that I'm having, and this is just the most recent version of it. And this is something I've talked about on other films. It's kind of why I haven't seen a Judd Apatow film for his last like two or three films, because it's just. I like funny people. The movie, actually, as
what?
Well as just people
oh,
who are
well.
Funny. I didn't mean to reference the movie. I like comedians, and I like when they're given their chance to riff. And I think that whole, you know how I know you're gay thing from the 40-Year-Old Virgin was hilarious. Mm. And, like, you know, just giving a guy or a woman who's super clever the chance to, like, go on a limb is great, but like, you need to, in a comedy movie that's almost 2 hours, you gotta do more than that. You gotta create some zing, you gotta create pacing in a scene.
Yeah.
Where, like,
I'm not totally disagreeing with you
on
that.
Like,
yeah,
there's a sitcom I was watching this morning called Happy Endings.
Oh,
have
geez.
You guys ever seen this?
It's pretty
I've
good.
Heard of it.
It's really good, and it is.
Did they bring it back? Because I remember it got canceled.
I think it got canceled and then revived and then finally canceled for real.
Okay.
But like, you know, Happy Endings, Community, these shows had writing. Like, they had repartee and wit and cleverness. And like, someone would say something and then at the end of the scene, it would somehow wrap back in. And it's like hilarious. And the editing would build the pacing. And you can just tell the craft and the care that went in, which is so much better than an uninspired mid-shot of four people talking, one of whom is wearing goggles and isn't that funny and has weird hair, the other of whom has like a 1930s school marm outfit on, and the other of whom is a horrific stereotype who just screams a lot.
It's just
like, for a movie that people were slamming as SJW progressive bullshit propaganda, this is such a basic, boring film.
you can't even
try to give them credit for being SJW propaganda, because propaganda, as onerous as it is, usually has some art in it. Like, this has no thought at all. It's just a bunch of crap that happens.
This is interesting because, you know, Amanda and I heaped a lot of praise onto 10 Cloverfield Lane, and one of your biggest reasons for not liking the film as a whole, or having a lot of issue against it, was just simply because of the fact that it had the tag of being a Cloverfield Lane, and you didn't feel like it was enough of a Cloverfield.
I felt that the marketing for that movie purposefully misled people for the purpose of selling what was a super good movie under false pretenses. I won't say that the quality of 10 Cloverfield Lane is lacking. I'll just say that I was annoyed at what I felt, again, was just a grab for cash that...
I do not want to revisit this dumb argument.
But this movie is just not good. Like, I wouldn't care if it's a Ghostbusters. This really honestly felt a lot to me like Now You See Me Too.
I've never seen that.
No one's seen that movie.
That's not fair.
It didn't deserve to be seen. I walked out of Now You See Me Too feeling almost exactly like I did in this movie. You know, it was just like needless callbacks, senseless plotting, a lot of people doing a lot of dumb things that are only done so they can keep moving the plot forward, and then it all, both this movie and Now You See Me Too, end with a grotesque, pornographic display of affection of the movie's world for the movie's characters that is, like, completely just onerous. Like, just,
pornographic?
Yeah.
Wait, are you talking about Now You See Me Too or this movie?
Both of them. I'm not saying pornographic is in people are literally having sex on scene. I'm saying it's gratuitous.
Like fetishized?
Yeah.
Is that a little more? Okay, I feel like that's a little more appropriate.
I've heard pornographic used in that context, so that's fine.
That's really strange. Yeah. Hey, if you're getting turned on by Now You See Me Too, I can't help
it. No, it has nothing to do with sex.
I'm just joking.
No, it does kind of have something to do with sex, because what it is it's more like the filmmaker is getting off doing those kind of things, which is also why they call it war porn or things like that.
Right.
It's not because everybody that observes it is like, oh man, now I got a hard on. No, it's because the person making it has a hard
like torture
while
porn.
Making it.
It's just something that revels in the excess and the banal, and it makes it banal, honestly.
I agree with a couple of your points, Brian. I do think there is, I would have liked more writing. I think there was a little bit too much of what you were talking about with just the awkward exchanges that just seemed to go, like I said, they seemed very strained, like they went nowhere. That whole thing with the, well, there was one in particular. I think it was the thing about, like, the Patrick Swayze movies.
God, fuck that.
I was just like, okay, this... Can we please not do this right now?
The one time that worked for me, actually, was Holtzman, who's played by Kate McKinnon, kind of messing with the national security guys.
Oh, that was
like,
good.
You know how many federal laws you've broken? She's like, one. They're like, no. And she says, two. And then they say,
oh,
no.
She's
for
really...
some reason, she goes back to one.
Yeah. She's real,
like,
cheeky.
Okay, I get that.
I like that. Yeah, no, I don't totally
disagree
with you.
I don't know if Chris Hemsworth's lines were written or if he improvised them. This is not a slam on Chris Hemsworth. I believe he's more of an actor than an improver, so I don't believe that he came up with some of the stupid shit he was supposed to say. Someone must have written that. But when he says...
Ooh, slide on Chris Hemsworth.
No, I'm saying it's not a slam. There's performers who perform the
He's an actor.
Word, and then there's, there's actors and there's improv, and I think Chris Hemsworth is an actor. And he delivers the shit out of the line. Fish tank is a submarine for fish.
He is. That whole
he's got some good deadpan stuff.
Yeah. That whole Mike Hat bit.
Oh my God.
I snorted very loud.
that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about, like, writing. It's like that had 14 layers to it, and you're just like, what the shit is happening right now?
And I think that's what it is about this movie, is that as much as I did enjoy it, there was so much inconsistency where you can have a bit like that that lands so well, but then you have these strained bits that I'm like, you're better than this, guys. Come on. Like, you can do better than this. And then what Bill was saying about it being slavishly, like, with being slavishly indebted to the first movie with a lot of the cameos. Yeah. I had a big issue with the cameos in this movie.
But also, just there's internal logic inconsistencies where it really feels like they shot a scene, they riffed it, and then they come to the next scene, and they're like, oh shit, we have to backtrack most of what we did in that other scene.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't a spoiler, but at some point they talk to the mayor of New York, and they're like,
What? Are you going to bring up the Jaws line?
No, I will not bring up the Jaws line. That is by far the best line in the movie, though.
That's a very good line. Outstanding.
Like, very self-aware. That.
So, but he and his weird, like, right-hand woman are like, look, we know ghosts are real. We know you're doing a good thing, but we want you to step back and just let the government handle it. You're really fucking shit up. And then it shows them walking down an alley, and they say, well, the mayor said we could keep doing what we're doing. And I'm like, that seems like the opposite of what he just said to
you. Yeah.
And then for some reason, there's a playing card table filled with guns, and they just start, like, having a little montage of shooting plasma shit at stuff.
Well,
and
it's
what the fuck is this movie doing?
Like, that kind of reminds me of Bill's point about, I really liked their arsenal. I really like what they did with the weapons in this movie.
I didn't understand the weapons.
Ooh, I loved. Do you really want logic to ghost busting?
A little bit. Okay, no, we'll talk about. No. We'll talk about the final set piece.
Yeah.
And that's when I'm going to have to bring out my issue with these weapons they have, because
if it focuses on the effects
of the weapons are weirdly inconsistent.
I had no issue with it.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think good for you all.
Well, I don't think
Bill
this
Graham,
isn't a movie.
The guy who wants to do a Zapruder film reconstruction of a shooting in 999 is totally fine with the proton packs and the Ghostbusters having completely variable effects.
Oh, and my God. Do you really want, like, to have someone explain in detail to you in this movie, like, a sequence of them just explaining how this stuff works?
If they did something where it was stupid. Like, this is what this does. And then, because the ending of this movie is basically the ending of a superhero film.
A bit, because
that's what everything is now.
We can wait to jump into that.
Okay, we will. But I guess I'll wrap up my spoiler free review by just saying, like, what a waste of time and what a waste of energy and effort. Like, I've seen people posting, like, we have to support women in film. We have to go see the Ghostbusters multiple times, good or bad. And I'm like, there are so many really good female led films out right now.
Right.
In theaters. You know, The Neon Demon. Not going to be for everyone. But the men in that film are basically worse than the men in this film. Like, if you want a subversion of the typical roles of man and woman in a normal film, go see The Neon Demon. You have, like, thoroughly well-written women. You have men making buffoons of themselves. You're doing crazy stuff, and it's awesome. And if you want, like, a comedy that's actually funny... that also has buffoonish men in it as the women are in control, go see Love and Friendship.
Yes.
Please go see that. But Brian, those films are, like, directed by men and written by men. Well, guess what? Like, so was this. Like,
this one had a women writer.
But so did The Neon Demon.
Yeah.
Oh.
I will never. Yeah. That is not an argument that I would ever.
Right. What I'm saying is this movie knew it was going to make this conversation happen. And if it didn't, if they literally traipsed into this unaware of the shitstorm they'd create, then they're fools. They had an opportunity here to make that happen and then pull out a great film. Because these are talented people. I thought it was fine.
I would
heartily disagree. And fine is fine, but I never tell people to go see a fine film. Every time that we have a film that I see is fine, I always say, you know, see it, don't see it. If you want to, do it. If you don't, don't bother because it's not important enough. Like, and that's kind of what this is. Like, I'm not going to tell people not to go see it, but you ask my opinion on it, it's less than fine. It's a mess.
Okay.
It's an utter mess.
One thing I would say is that more than likely they didn't start to get into pre-production and start working on this film and realize that they were going to just brew this big of a shitstorm. I think definitely while they were in production, they were very aware of the fact that this was happening, that, you know, it had riled a lot of people's feathers. And sure, maybe they had a very vocal minority that was doing that. Mm-hmm. But regardless, they knew that this was going to end up more than likely being one of these kind of, like Brian's kind of mentioning, one of these event films where a lot of people are paying attention to whether this succeeds or doesn't succeed and at what different levels. You know, does it make money? Yes, that's one. Does it actually work as a film? That's another. And what does it do for the female cast members? What does it do for the male cast members? What does it do for their relationship between them in this film? And, you know, it's kind of funny that they have this hunky guy that Kristen Wiig just can't help but make fucking jokes about the entire time. Mm-hmm. And yet, if you reverse that role, people would be slamming the shit out of this film. Like, right. Can you imagine if it was just some big bosomed woman that was, you know, just one character just couldn't help but like fall over themselves for? And I think that would turn into an Adam Sandler Netflix movie more than anything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
God.
You know, it's like.
Well, that was the funny thing is that people kept saying, like, well, look at the original. Look at how, what was her name? Janine
Potts. Janine, yeah.
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 I'm like, no, she wasn't like a stereotype of woman. She was a stereotype of like a person.
A secretary. Like
a goddamn New York secretary.
Oh, yeah, she was.
Like, she knows how to pick up the. She knows what she's doing.
In a great way.
Like, yeah, she Ghostbusters, what do you want? Like, that's perfect.
Yeah, oh, I love that.
And he can't even comprehend what a phone is. Which I don't have a problem with, because, again, that led to some of the only times that I laughed in this movie.
He is great. And my favorite thing.
Oh, my God, him covering his eyes because that's how he thinks he hears.
Yeah, well, and so that brings up a very specific. So here's the thing is that's another key moment where it is again slavishly devoted to the original. There is a line, I believe it's delivered by Dan Aykroyd, and it's this great line where they're in this basement and they're walking around all four of the Ghostbusters, and he goes, wait, everybody be quiet. You smell that? And it's just like it's one of those things where if you don't pick up on it, you're not gonna laugh. But it's like, why is he telling everybody to be quiet if he's asking people to smell something?
Oh. Right?
And it's one of those things, again, where it's like, okay, instead of closing his ears, what's he going to do? He's going to close his eyes because he's a dodo. And it's like,
here's the thing.
What?
In this movie, they draw attention to that. And this is, again, not something that's purely the fault of this movie, but a lot of comedies, it's like, you make the joke, because I guess him covering his eyes counts as a joke. And then the joke. I mean, I'm not saying it's not funny. I'm just saying etymology of the word joke. Is that a joke or is that a gag? I think it's a gag.
Sure.
Doesn't matter.
It's a gag.
It's
a
funny part. But then they're like, oh, he's covering his eyes. Oh, he thinks he hears with his eyes. And I'm like, I already got that, guys. Yeah. Like, you can move on. Like, start delivering other jokes.
His line about when they realize that he doesn't have lenses in his glasses, and they're like, why don't you have lens? And he's like, oh, because they kept on getting dirty. So the reason
they don't get dirty.
Yeah, I'm like, thanks. That's the one thing I wish I could do with my glasses, but I actually have to use them to see.
Yeah.
Like, awesome.
That was pretty great. Do we have any other? I mean, there's a whole other level of this movie that I need to exoriate, as far as like plot logic. In spoilers, is there anything that we need to talk about before then?
Before we jump, I do want to say that I actually think the Patty, the MTA worker Patty, played by Leslie Jones. I actually like her character in this film.
I love her character.
I think yes, she's loud and she's brash.
They're all loud, though.
Yes.
They're all screaming all the time and yelling.
Okay.
This is another thing that's just like that I've gotten tired of is like manic energy replacing just repertoire. But it's, again, not something that's in this movie. And
I don't think it's out of control in this movie, though. I don't think it's control,
but
ridiculous.
It's more than is needed. But I mean, and this is the thing. If people haven't heard me make these points before, it's because we don't usually talk about comedies on this.
Sure.
You know,
and I think
not broad
I think
comedies we, like this.
No,
yeah, I mean, I think we
Love
know
and Friendship
why now
was a hilarious movie. But that was more of a comedy of manners. This is, you know,
an austere comedy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think you already let everybody know why we probably haven't reviewed very many comedies on this podcast, and it's because of your own kind of, you know, dislike of the Judd Apatow style comedy, and you're just like, nope, not gonna work.
Well,
there's been a Judd Apatow style comedy that's come out since we've really started doing this.
Is Life After 40?
Oh, Trainwreck. We were gonna talk about Trainwreck, but I think we just got sidetracked. Ayo.
Yeah, we did.
By
we
something else. But I've heard that it's good. And again,
it's
a movie that was written by Amy Schumer.
Right.
And I'm sure that there's a lot of improv that goes into it, but I heard that, you know, the plot and the writing for the non-actors made that movie. Like, are you going to get... Kobe Bryant was in that, wasn't he? Or was that LeBron James?
No. LeBron James.
LeBron James was in that movie, and apparently he was goddamn hilarious.
He is.
Kobe Bryant is not in this movie.
I don't
Okay. So,
anyway,
so
but yeah, I mean,
we,
I've heard
we went
that
down this
it's
angle.
Fantastic.
We went down this angle, and I'm going to bring it back to Patty and Leslie Jones, and I think she's got a lot of energy in this film, certainly, and she does play it kind of over the top, but I think what she brings is actually kind of intelligence. She doesn't bother calling the cops at all. She goes straight to the Ghostbusters because she kind of believes in their cause. Of course, you know, if you see a ghost for the first time in your entire life, more than likely you're going to be like, holy shit, who's going to believe me?
Well, yeah, because Bill, if there's something strange in your neighborhood, I mean, who are you going to call?
Yes, Ghostbusters.
What do they call themselves? The
Center for something of metaphysical potato
anyway,
chips. I can't remember.
Okay, let me make this point and then we can move on. So one thing that she does do is she brings in a very, very thorough knowledge of the city itself, how to get places, and it is funny because there's one moment where they ask how to get somewhere and it's someone else pointing out like all of the locations and stuff like that. It's not actually her, which, you know, again, that's kind of one of those double things where it's like, oh, this is her character's function, and then they give that character function to someone else real quick,
right? Because they don't care.
Okay, maybe.
No.
I don't know what that means.
There's such a weird thing. Like, you're saying her thing should be history and places and...
Yeah.
Like, but everyone gets to do all this stuff kind of interchangeably. Like, there's no point where she becomes, their Ghostbuster historian. Like, I really thought they were going to play up, like, old New York history and, like, she was going to become a part of it.
Yeah.
And
she does.
One line.
To a degree, she does, yeah.
One line.
Well, I mean, she doesn't have a whole lot of other interaction, and neither do the other Ghostbusters, really. They usually have one or two moments where they really kind of key in on everything, and the rest is literal service to jokes, right?
Well,
so, the plotting of the film is very kind of ham-fisted, yes. But I do think, you know, she serves that function, and she serves the function well. She is intelligent in the way that she presents herself. She isn't just this loud, you know, brash MTA worker. It's like, no, she actually has some intelligence behind her and things like that.
And she's got a big gold chain with her name on it.
Hell yeah, she does. She's a very active character, which is what I really like about it. Like, she is a very active, very just, you know, she really takes initiative and I think she's definitely not. That's the other thing too, is that they sort of share the responsibility of being like the butt of jokes. Mm-hmm. And yes. sort of like making, you know, making fun of each other or goofing on each other. You know, I don't think that anybody is misrepresented in this movie at all. I don't see an issue there at all.
I don't either.
And I think people are just grasping at stuff by trying to say that there is some sort of misrepresentation.
I'll take your word for it.
Mm-hmm, Brian.
As someone who's not a POC, I can't begin to describe or understand what that is like and what their views towards representation is. Maybe they'll find this to be progressive. I just don't know. I do know, however, that if I was writing this, I would feel deeply uncomfortable with the way that she was done.
I
actually read somewhere that she was originally going to be Abby Yates.
Abby Yates was originally going to be... Melissa McCarthy was originally going to be Patty.
Right, who is the MTA worker.
Yeah, but right. I don't know like
so they were
how...
Be, they were swapped.
Yeah, I don't know how that all happened, but... I don't think it's... Yeah, but it's... Anyway, we'll get into it when we... Any spoilers.
Well, we should probably get into spoilers now, because I tried that.
Yeah, we might as well.
All right, so... That's our thoughts, I guess. You two kind of liked it. You acknowledged the flaws. I found the flaws to be too much to overcome. So let us get into spoilers for the Ghostbusters.
No!
Speaking of unforgettable...
Alright, I was going to let that play out until at least the lyric was done, but you know what I just remembered? The lyrics don't start for like a good 40 seconds. That is Fallout Boy's new theme for the Ghostbusters.
Why Fallout Boy?
Who fucking knows? I got some real issues with the ending of this movie. Let's begin with a question that broke me for perhaps the last 15 minutes of this movie. So they find out that this guy, this janitor at a hotel, has been setting the ghosts loose because he's weird and people hate him because he's weird, or he's weird because people hate him and he wants to destroy the world. Cool. He kills himself to become a ghost so that he might lead the ghost army in their destruction of the city. Fine again. He freezes a detachment of the American military in what I thought he was going to make them do the Thriller dance. It did not happen.
He does, but they cut it because it was too long.
But that's sad. So he freezes them. He freezes them and they're stuck and they don't move and they don't blink and everything is terrible. And then the Ghostbusters appear. And this man, who is a ghost, found the American military with their physical weapons to be such a threat that he froze them all. But when the people who specialize in the extermination of ghosts arrive, he just throws ghosts at them. Why did he not freeze them? Like he was obviously capable of doing with everyone else. Why, while they were busy having a Marvel-style fight with the ghosts, did he not transform into the giant, colossal, building-destroying monster that he became later once they'd already defeated his ghost minions? What the fuck is going on in the ending of this movie?
Eh. I'm fine with it.
So here's bad guy logic 101, and I'll introduce this class by giving a couple of examples. The first example is The Force Awakens, where the main bad guy with a lightsaber, he decides not to just slice everybody in half as soon as he can. Instead, he wants to kind of exert his dominance and just be like, you know, ha ha ha, look at me, I'm awesome with a lightsaber. There's some other examples, but this one, again, he's having an ego trip. He's basically exerting his dominance, and they surprisingly one-up him. This is bad guy logic 101. Get your syllabus at the end of class.
I'm sorry,
thanks.
Bill, for the amount of times that you've bitched about mundane shit in movies, for you to gloss over this is unacceptable.
This oh, is the same God. Argument in The Force Awakens where people were like, Finn picks up a lightsaber and he's really good with it. No, he's not. He's not really good with it.
He's terrible with it.
He gets
but that's not the same thing at all, Bill. That's literally not the same thing. You have a man here who has frozen an entire military detachment and then decides not to freeze the only four people who can stop him. That's not the same thing as Finn picking up a lightsaber and going berserk and getting his ass handed to him as he's fighting a person who's already wounded. That, I mean, and I had problems with The Force Awakens. It doesn't matter. But this is just stupid. It's what I'm talking about earlier with the lack of writing.
Yeah.
They're like, well, yeah, we had the Homeland Security people.
It doesn't
what do
bother
do about
me.
Them?
Well,
let's
like,
freeze
it's...
them. Okay, well, what about when the Ghostbusters show up? Let's have Jack Skellington show up and take over and throw some ghosts at them. And then what are they going to do? Because, you know, the Ghostbusters basically have proton lassos that they use to drag ghosts over a bear trap. Well, let's just say that the proton packs now are capable of disintegrating people. I don't know. And it's just like... It breaks down, and I can't follow what the fuck is going on, and nothing makes sense, and it's just dumb. It's dumb and thoughtless and stupid, and it's
well,
I
now
can't
you feel,
believe that you're fine with
now
it.
You know how I feel when I watch the first half of the last Avengers movie. Not being able to follow shit.
Well, yeah, that's basically what I'm talking about. I didn't like the last Avengers movie. Or the first Avengers movie, for that matter.
I like
but
the first
I just,
one.
But yeah, no, I don't... It's. I mean, I think that's the thing. You have to remember that this movie is also trying to appeal to kids.
Yeah.
And it's not.
So
I don't really.
Wall-E.
I don't really see like the problem with that.
And this is a PG-13 movie.
I don't really see the problem with it. It's just. It's
again,
a, like
for
I
the
said
amount
before.
Of
these
stuff
movies
that you all take umbrage with in other films that you're giving this one a pass is unbelievable to me.
No, it's not unbelievable. It's not. I mean, this is just, like I said, this is just a dumb, just like the original movie, this is just dumb fun. This is just dumb commercial fun.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's all about the setup. It's what can we do to set up this next joke? What can we do to set up this next action set piece? And
but they don't
and
even
yeah.
bother with setup in this. It's all just incident. It all just occurs and nothing really takes place off of anything that goes before it.
Sure.
I mean, there's ghost balloons for some reason. And
those ghost balloons were creepy as shit.
Those were creepy as shit. That's some good production design. Yep. But they're, like, shooting them with the proton packs, and they're popping. And then she pops one with a hunter's knife, a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
But, like, we've seen ghosts pass through things previously.
Well, these
Why
were
is
balloons.
The balloon ghost not also just a ghost?
I just think you're driving yourself crazy, Brian.
Because the movie is poorly crafted. The movie sucks. Like,
I think you're just
I don't get
take,
it.
I don't, but it's not there. Like I said, Feig's movies are just basically joke delivery systems.
Again,
that's all
no
that
jokes.
They are. And, like, this is all this movie is. It's not meant to be this, like, nuanced, you know, perfectly plotted film. Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't understand, like, why that's so hard to digest. I
don't know. I like the weapons and the way they interact with the
ghosts. I
thought
the weapons were cool as shit.
The only ghost that I really had an issue with was the demon thing in the middle where Ozzy...
Yeah, what was that
ghost of? Well, but like...
A gargoyle?
I guess.
Yeah, it was a demon. It was
a
demon.
All the other ghosts sort of appear to be...
It was a demon.
Is it actually a demon?
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a
demon.
I
will
That's why it takes that form.
I will say, I like how the final set piece basically becomes Gangs in New York.
What? Oh, yeah.
Does it?
Kind of
does.
Yeah, there's a bunch of mist and people are slashing at each other and it gets all crazy.
It's kind of a Daniel Day-Lewis
like,
ghost running
like,
around.
There's a moment where Kate McKinnon does her big action
ghost.
Secrets.
That would have been awesome.
That would have been real good. There was a lot of axes flying, that's all I'll say.
Yeah.
Kate McKinnon's like big like action set piece in this film. A lot of people were cheering after that. It was pretty cool. I liked it. She definitely became a fan.
And then you can have a really cool thing that people will cheer at, and then you know don't think about it because it
sounds good to me. That all sounds good to me.
I love it. Okay with that.
I am perfectly okay with that. If you are okay with fucking The Shallows. and you have an issue with this movie, I can't even take you seriously, Brian.
I don't have an issue with The Shallows.
You don't? I know, that's what I mean. If you don't have an issue with The Shallows, but you have issues
that
with this movie,
movie
logic
built
issues,
up its own
I cannot
internal
take you seriously.
Logic and built everything off of it. I don't understand.
Oh no,
the issue
absolutely
that
you
not. Have with The Shallows that you would apply to this movie.
Oh, what issue don't I have with The Shallows? There's so many. Oh,
you leave
just,
Steven Seagal
it's
out
all
of this.
Just silly, dumb fun. What's wrong with that?
Because The Shallows was well-made, silly, dumb
no,
fun.
No, it was not. Absolutely.
This
you
movie...
cannot even tell me that the fucking CGI in The Shallows was better than the CGI in this movie. Do not even tell me that.
Okay, The Shallows
Do
was made
not even
for
tell
like
me that.
$14 million, and this was $144. I mean, it doesn't matter how good the CG is if I don't give a
yes,
shit about
does.
The story surrounding
yes,
it.
Yes, it does. When your central villain is a shark and you can't even make a good-looking shark,
certainly disagree
that's
about
a problem.
The quality of the shark.
That's a big problem. That shark sucked.
I don't understand why you're talking about a movie that literally cost a tenth of this movie and then trying to use that as a way to defend this one.
Because you're trying to bring up logic, but meanwhile you like The Shallows.
If the shark had grown wings and flown out of the thing and she had made a gun out of the fire coil, I would have had the same issue as I had with this movie. But that movie played by the rules of the reality that it created. This movie didn't bother.
This movie neither did The Shallows.
Yes,
the Shallows
did.
Didn't, and it looked like crap.
Bill, can you please back me up here?
If we have because
to have
I don't
Shallows versus Ghostbusters argument, which is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
I don't
You're the stupidest thing
either.
I ever heard.
No, you are.
Okay. It finally happened. It finally fucking happened.
We're there. We're
Welcome
there,
to
guys.
The next 40 minutes of this podcast. No,
I'm
you
just,
are.
I'm ripping off my shirt like Hulk Hogan right now. We're going at it.
Let's go, brother.
No, well, like I said before, Brian, I am not disagreeing with you. I did have a lot of issues with the writing, but I think it's kind of like you have to get to a point where you just have to be like, this is just good old fashioned.
It's like freezing to death. At some point, you just let the warmth take you and die.
Yes. I
don't know. I had no real issue with the fact that he doesn't freeze them, because then, you know, why would this film even exist? It wouldn't.
Well, why not? Here's the question. Why not have him send ghosts to attack the military, who would be completely helpless against the ghosts, have them be overwhelmed, and then have the Ghostbusters show up and save everyone that way? Because then you don't have to introduce this mechanic that makes you wonder why he's not using that incredible power he has again. Why does a ghost have the ability to freeze people anyway?
I don't know. But
this is not something we've seen them do before.
This is also not an apparition that they capture this apparition once and they have a really tough time with it. And then the rest of the time it's escaped. So they don't really know. Like, I mean, you're acting like we know what this thing is capable of. We don't know what this thing is.
No.
The demon. Dude, the demon. The thing that we are talking about. I'm sorry.
We're not talking about the dragon ghost. We're talking about what's his face?
We're talking about petulant man baby nerd ghost.
Yes. But, I mean, we don't know what he's capable of, right?
And that's a problem.
No, I don't think so.
Why is it a problem that
because
we're discovering
no
it with them?
But they don't
there's
discover
stakes.
It.
There's plenty of stakes.
What do you mean
because
they don't discover
in this
it? They
movie
come
matters.
Upon
everything is just at the whims of whoever's plotting that particular scene. Whatever second unit director they brought in to competently shoot that action scene.
I have no issue with it because we don't know what the guy is capable of, and once he takes over, we don't know.
But
they
bad
don't know
storytelling.
What
to not set up the parameters of the conflict,
Brian.
And to just make things up as you go along is not.
So you just want every. So what you're saying, Brian, is you just want everything explained to you.
I don't want everything explained. I want parameters.
That's what you're making it sound like.
I want parameters put in place so I know the stakes.
You want like a psycho doctor to come in.
I would love for them
to
at some point have said, we know that ghosts are.
And explain in detail.
Yes, because you need.
Why?
You can't just have an omnipotent. You can't just have an omnipotent power that is capable of creating different powers for itself at will.
Yes, you can.
And then not using them.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
Let me ask you something, Amanda.
Why would you want that, Brian? That's fighting boring someone, shit.
Because what? Why is this?
Why any would
less
you
than
want
boring?
Somebody to come in and be like, okay, here's what this ghost is capable of, da 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 da, and like go through a
it
list and explain
this one,
why he's able to
like
do
Pokemon.
Them.
It explain. Should be ghosts.
Why would you want that?
Ghosts can.
That's not the point
X.
of this movie.
There is no
That's
point
not
to
the
this
point.
Movie.
That's not the point of this movie. Is to have is to explain.
Right. The point of this movie is to have an
of
enemy,
ghosts in detail.
An enemy who can do whatever he wants as long as it's convenient for the plot.
Yes. That's fine. I'm
that's not
fine.
Fine.
Yes, it is fine, Brian. Because why do you? Why
that's
do you?
How,
want,
that's how like, all of these movies function. They
and
function
not,
on.
Have you not heard me in the past rail against this? Like this
okay,
is a
that
problem. It's the
okay.
same problem we had with Apocalypse, Bill.
Oh Jesus! That movie. We talked about that movie for like 5 minutes, dude. We did not have a chance to go into
no,
it.
No, we did not.
That
but
movie.
I would say that one of the biggest
on
problems.
A completely different level.
One of the problems with that movie, though, was the ill-defined power set given to the central bad guy, and the
sure.
fact that he has world-ending power and then decides to use it to make costumes for his henchmen.
Sure.
Fabulous as they may be. And that's the
yeah,
same
like
issue here. You are making someone, and you say to yourself, what can they do to overpower our heroes? And when you say everything, but not all the time, you
but
fail
this...
to create a consistent world that a fucking viewer can get invested in.
This oh, no. film, this film, at no point does it ever reference the Holocaust. Like, this film is on a completely different fucking level. It's a comedy, and it is a dumb comedy about people fighting fucking ghosts with nuclear weapons. Like, what the fuck? None of this even makes any fucking sense whatsoever.
So you're saying because the movie sets up to be a piece of shit, we should just be fine with it being a piece of shit?
No, no. I am not saying that. I am saying that there are rough parameters where a film is going to play fast and loose with whatever it's setting up because it needs to do that to keep the stakes going, to keep
because
the film's
they
momentum.
Didn't take
going.
The time to craft a sensible narrative.
Sure, some there are plot holes and there are things like that. That's comes with just about every big budget natured film, right?
Is that acceptable?
I'm not saying it is or isn't. I'm saying it is what we have. And I'm not going to rail against it because it's a big, dumb comedy and I don't really care. My main function in this film are two things. Do the ghosts look real or not real? Good. Yes, they look good. Did I laugh? Yes, I laughed. Boom, boom, done. I don't really care if it's that well plotted or that well engineered, because that's not what I'm trying to get out of this particular film. Now, if we want to say whether it's a good film, no, it's not a very good film. Did I laugh? Yes, I laughed. Did the ghost look good? The ghost looked good. I don't know. Like, I mean, Transformers and some of these other big budget films are trying to do something. They're trying to be epic. They're trying to be this kind of thing where they just never quite reach it. And they're so bombastic and loud that it just gets to a point where you just physically and mentally just shut down. This film never gets to that point. It's an hour and 51 minutes. It shuts off right before it gets to that point. And I don't know. The logic doesn't always have to connect with me with something that's this inherently stupid to begin with.
Right.
But,
okay. The concept, yeah.
But at times, yes, there does have to be some kind of internal logic. Now, you're harping on one particular moment and
you mean
situation.
I'm harping on the entire climax of the film. Don't okay. make this seem like it's some small thing. Like, this is a real enduring problem throughout the entire film that is typified by this scene and this
throughout the film.
Act.
What?
I mean, there's
it's
a point
not
where
throughout the film, Brian.
There's a point where they talk about the creature that they've caught, the demon dragon
mm-hmm.
beast.
Yes.
And they alternate between calling it a 3 and a 4 on whatever scale they have. Like, It's just the fundamental laziness of this narrative and the fact that they can't
fucking agree on a 3 versus a 4, and that's a reason that it's a bad.
It's not in the narrative, Bill. It's not in the narrative that they're like, it's a 3. No, it's a 4. They say, we've caught a 4, blah, blah, blah. And then later on, they're like, oh, it's like a level 3, blah, blah, blah. They just don't know, because they don't care.
That's such an insanely specific thing that I can't argue it, because I never fucking noticed it, because wouldn't have been paying attention that much.
The movie doesn't care to create a system that anyone could get invested in.
Who
obviously
cares,
I do,
Glenn?
Amanda. Obviously I do, because I prefer my movies to at least give off a simulacra of, like, giving a fuck. And this movie doesn't.
Well, I mean, Brian, again, like, I can't argue with that because of the fact that I never noticed that. So I can't say, well, this is why they didn't agree with each other, or that.
But it
that
wasn't
was
a
literally...
disagreement, Bill. It's not a disagreement in the narrative.
Okay, you're saying that.
It's
I can't disagree.
So what
I
do you
can't
want?
Disagree.
Okay.
Like, I literally cannot disagree
Here's
with you.
Here's what you do, Amanda.
And I can't
Here's what I'd love. I would love, in the background, in the writer's room, for them to say, let's create a taxonomy, and let's never talk about it in the movie, but let's make it appear that the characters know what they talk about.
No. Well, how did you,
like,
how
Guillermo
did you
del
feel
Toro,
about...
If you walked up to Guillermo del Toro and say to him, tell me how one of the kaiju in... What was that movie? Pacific Rim, like, eats and then lives and breeds. He could tell you because he knows, but they never put that in the movie. But
that is not the point of this movie, Brian. The point of this movie is not to be
a logical world.
You want
important to telling a story.
Here's what you want. You want an accurate representation of beings that don't exist, of ghosts. You want
I want internal narrative logic, and you have to work on that.
Cannot believe that is the most insane thing I've ever heard.
Why?
So
why is that insane? To create
an accurate representation of something that doesn't exist? Of, like, you want something that is like an accurate representation of paranormal science?
If you're making it up, yes. If you're the writer who's making this up, you have to put the time in to make your creation make sense.
It's not the point of this movie. The point of this movie is not to be a great ghost movie. The point of this movie is to be a fun, stupid comedy.
Well, then it failed
at
that too. I don't know what to tell you.
I don't think it failed.
Okay, well, good for you.
I don't think it failed at that. It
doesn't make any sense. What you want out of this movie does not make any sense.
I don't understand how it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense, because why the hell would you care about whether or not the ghosts are accurately represented?
They don't. I'm not asking for accuracy, Amanda. I'm asking for consistency, and those are two very different things. And one of them is the job of a person creating a narrative.
No, I just think that it's not the point of this movie. The point of this movie is not to give you stuff that makes like a crap ton of logical sense. All it's doing is just trying to make you laugh. Why do you have an issue with that?
Because
that's
it didn't make me laugh.
That's
a problem.
That's his reason.
If this movie does not amuse me, and it gives me the mental space to begin looking at it in a critical light, which as a critic I should be doing.
Yeah, and you are.
And it fails on both of those levels. It fails on both of those levels. And I can't even give it that it was trying, because it wasn't. And you can clearly see that in the way that it ends.
Well, you know what, Brian? You can be a miserable bastard, and Bill and I will enjoy this movie.
No, I'll just go watch fucking Love and Friendship.
Okay. Why are you bringing Love and Friendship up?
Because you talked about being a miserable bastard. I'm trying to think of the last movie that made me laugh.
Love and Friendship too, but that's comparing apples to oranges.
Okay, then I'll watch the original Ghostbusters.
The original Ghostbusters sucked and it's corny as hell.
There it is.
Have you watched it in the last 20 years?
Yes.
It's bad.
Okay.
Meh. That's what I think about all of this. All of this. Don't interrupt me, okay?
All right, Bill, go ahead.
If you want...
No, you know what, Bill?
Look, I understand what Brian's getting at, because I understand that there are people out there like James Cameron and people out there like Guillermo del Toro and things like that, that when they are creating these magical fictional worlds, they create a narrative and they create a taxonomy and they create like a literal reality around what they are creating. And some films bear that out, and some films like James Cameron's fucking Prometheus just don't make any sense whatsoever.
That wasn't James Cameron.
Sorry. It's Ridley Scott. Yes.
I love Prometheus.
Oh, that movie's a fucking just nightmare. Mess all over.
Love it.
But it is gorgeous, and I still enjoyed it. So, you know, what the hell does that say about me? I don't know. But there is a level of people making this background and stuff like that that has only recently started to pop up. Now, I don't know. You're not necessarily calling for a literal book on apparitions and things like that.
No,
you're
I don't need a professor to stand up in the movie.
Quit interrupting me.
I was actually agreeing with you.
I understand. So go ahead. What you were doing, but stop. Because what that ends up doing is you end up going down a narrative, and then all of a sudden I have to track it back. So I understand, because what you're basically asking for is consistency between what is said and what is done and what is seen and things like that. And I certainly can agree that some films don't track well in that regard, whether they're shooting for it or not. And I do agree that that can come off as lazy. Now, the examples you've given, both Amanda and I have disagreed with you, or the example that you've given, we can't recall that ever happening, so we can't disagree or agree with it. So you're bringing up a bunch of arguments about why this film narratively doesn't have any consistency, and we're just over here shrugging our shoulders because we either A, didn't hone in on that very specific thing, or B, just don't agree with the fact that, you know, the bad guy at the end just doesn't is careless and is an egomaniac and is just shrugging his shoulders, but like, oh, there's a threat over there. Like, who cares?
He's just inconsistently written. Every action he takes is inconsistent. It's not a flaw in the character.
He literally doesn't freeze the four people that can kill him. How is that not careless?
No, I'm saying it's not in his character to be careless. It's not inherent in the writing of him. It's something that was done just to allow for the action scene without the military having to be there.
Okay,
there were ways to deal with that. Don't have the military. Have the military taken out by ghosts. Just don't freeze them.
And this, again,
is not about this specific scene. It's about the entirety of the movie, the way it was written, the way it was constructed. It's lazy,
yes,
it's thoughtless, and it has no purpose behind it. And I'm not okay with it. I'm not willing to say it's just stupid. I'm going to let it be stupid because it's not good enough, especially when, if you like me, you don't find it to be funny, because then you don't even have, oh, these people cared and put craft and time into it. You don't. I'm not talking about this anymore. I can't.
Okay. Well, let me finish. Okay. Because what you brought up was the character is inconsistent, but the character is not a ghost, an apparition, a powerful being all the way through. He only becomes that at the end, mm-hmm. and he only takes form at the end, and he only starts exerting his powers at the end. So his character as a whole has fundamentally changed, because now he has power. Now he has the ability to fuck with people. And now he's exploring the fact that he can literally freeze people. And you're like, how can he freeze people? I don't know. He's just got that power now.
I don't find that to be a good enough answer.
Okay.
It's just not.
Okay, that's fine.
As a person being told a story, you should expect more. I mean, that's all I can say.
Here's what I'm going to say on that topic.
You know, okay.
So, and I know that you said that we couldn't talk about the original till the end, so I am. So, I hadn't watched the original Ghostbusters in probably a good 20 years. So I was ready to just write it off as, oh, I remember it being mildly entertaining. but I don't remember laughing out loud at it. Whatever. It happened to be on AMC the other day. And so I watched it as research. And one of the things after watching the new one that I realized is how, and this is something you brought up, Bill, the core relationship between, you know, all the women and their friendships and coming together, and how there is a certain, there is a nice, like, there's almost like a tenderness there, especially between Melissa McCarthy's character.
Yeah.
And Kristen Wiig's character, because they've known each other since high school.
Yeah, it really focuses on them because they were,
especially at the end.
It basically split them apart, this belief in this thing, and it's what drove them back together, right? And it's what's keeping them together.
And that's not, and I think there's something very refreshing about that, because if you watch the original Ghostbusters, it's very mean spirited. And Peter Venkman is an awful person.
Oh yeah.
And I do not understand why people celebrate him as a character, because
he's funny.
He's a fuckboy supreme, and he's awful to everyone, and I don't like this, and I know it was something in the 80s, and I'm going to chalk it up to the Robert Altman movie, MASH, starting it, where it's just this celebration of men acting like assholes in comedies, and just celebrating that.
Well, isn't that like Revenge of the Nerds, where Revenge of the Nerds isn't necessary. Well, so what Revenge of the Nerds kind of represents is that they become powerful, and what do they do? They bully the people that was bullying them, right? That's the narrative of that film. yes. They do a lot of really shitty things in that film, what is going on in this narrative that anybody likes that film?
I've never seen Revenge of the Nerds, so I can't state.
Oh, you've never seen Revenge of the Nerds? It's worth watching at least once, just as a cultural.
I heard that it was pretty mean-spirited. There was an episode of The Canon, the podcast with Devin Faraci and Amy Nicholson, where they went Revenge of the Nerds versus Animal House.
Ooh, Animal House is very mean-spirited.
But I feel like, I mean, again, I've never seen Revenge of the Nerds, but what I've heard is that Revenge of the Nerds is somehow more mean-spirited.
I'm sorry. I am confusing my names. I was thinking of Animal House, actually.
Oh, you meant Animal House?
Look.
Well, then, Bill, I've seen Animal House.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm going to take back what I said then. Well, and that's the thing, too, is
it still holds up, though, because that is a hallmark 80s.
You mean Animal House?
Yes.
I mean, it's definitely of an era, if that's what you mean. It's an artifact.
It's definitely an artifact.
I don't know if I would laugh. I don't think I've ever laughed at Animal House in my life. I'm not surprised.
I mean, you laughed at Ghostbusters 2016. Or isn't Ghostbusters Answer the Call?
Oh,
no, it's not.
At the end of the movie, when the final title comes up, it says Ghostbusters Answer the Call.
If someone did, either of y'all buy a ticket for this?
Yes.
Yeah.
What the fuck does that say?
It says Ghostbuh.
Answered the call.
It says Ghostbuh because they don't have a lot of characters on those ticket stubs. This is the same question I had about Fast and Furious 7, because in some places it was
Fast
Furious 7, some places it was Fast 7, some places it was Fast and Furious 7.
Yeah. Speaking of inconsistency.
Oh, man, like, you know, I love to talk about the naming conventions of the Fast and Furious movies.
Well, do you really want Twilight or the Twilight Saga, New Moon?
Colon, New Moon.
Part two. Like,
wait.
Like, we don't need all that shit. Like, the Hunger Games Saga / Mockingjay Part two. And it's just like, oh, damn it. Like,
Act one.
If your film literally doesn't have enough traction to keep audiences like enthralled in between films, you're not doing a very good job.
Mm. Yeah. Anyway, but that's just what I think. Just for me, one of the fundamental differences
is that this one is kinder.
It's much kinder. It is. And I think it's much more about friendship. Whereas I think the first movie just was not at all.
I can't deny that, but I found the meanness of the first movie, the original, I guess, it was funny. Like, you know, he's a dick, but he's funny. Like,
it's not. And then it doesn't hold up.
I disagree,
I don't think it does.
I guess,
oh, it does not
well,
hold
like,
up.
Here's the thing, though. Like, Parks and Recreation, that television show, which Kate DiPold actually wrote on and was like a producer on, like, that started off as an Office clone, along with all the mean-spiritedness that entails.
Well, she also wrote for Parks and Rec, which also started off as an Office clone.
Didn't that? Is that not what I just said?
Yeah, that's
you
what
said
she...
Community.
No, I said Parks and Rec.
No, he said Parks and Rec.
Oh, I'm losing my mind.
You are. But no, Parks and Rec started off as an Office clone. Community did not. Community was its own thing right from the beginning. But Parks and Rec started off as a purebred Office clone, which was mean, and it wasn't funny. What? And then the second season hit, and they decided to go with heart and kindness, you know, if you want to talk about that split. But it was still super funny.
No, yeah, no, totally. I mean, it,
so you
it
can
shifted
do that.
180 degrees.
Right.
It was great. And, but
like,
yeah,
I think if
that's...
she had made, like, a Parks and Rec-style Ghostbusters, because, again, there's writing.
Oh, my God.
She did.
I don't think she did.
If you're thinking about, if you're talking about, like, this, because one of the things about Parks and Rec is it's basically these women who are basically just, like, over the moon for each other and just love being around each other and are joking and having fun together. I think that captures, I think this movie definitely captures that.
But it's funny. And big Parks time. And Rec had good, solid, again, writing.
I won't disagree. So here's the thing about comedy is that this is,
please explain comedy to us, Bill.
No. This is one of the fundamental issues with reviewing a comedy and things like that, because what you can ultimately say is, I didn't laugh at this film.
Right.
And someone right next to you can say, I laughed my ass off throughout the entire film. And you can't agree and disagree based on that fundamental flaw of, I didn't laugh at it. Is that a function of the film? Is that a function of you? Is that a function of the characters in the film? Do you just hate that person? Or is it a function of they just didn't deliver their lines well and things like that? So like, there's an issue when you say, but it wasn't funny, because what that's saying is you didn't laugh. It's not saying necessarily
unfunny.
Sure. And like, when we talk about like a, I don't know, like a drama or something like that, we can usually agree on fundamental things like, hey, this line or this sequence or this overarching narrative was really, really good. Yeah. And I think a comedy usually falters because what it ultimately ends up being most remembered for is whether you laughed at it or not, whether it served that raw function.
Right.
And it's not whether it was written well or things like that. So, I mean, yeah, we can definitely agree that Parks and Rec is probably mildly funnier. I mean, it's got
mildly?
What? 20,
Bill.
Hold on. It's got 25
well,
minutes.
Well, the first few seasons.
Okay. Anyways, it's
second,
got 25
like, yeah,
minutes.
Last two seasons got a little
it's
freaky.
Got 25 minutes to basically set up and deliver a string of jokes. It's a little bit easier in that tightly confined format to do. Now, we can extrapolate out and say how many seasons or how many episodes. Sure. Okay, fine. They did a really good job. But they also have a writing staff, right? They have a ton of people behind that, which are helping to make this 25 minutes hilarious.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's that. But
you can't
we can
bring
also
punch
probably
up people on a movie. I mean, that kind of shit happens all the time.
It does, but they're not around the entire time, right? They're not there to basically say, hey, this isn't funny enough. Look, why more films aren't made in the Pixar kind of mold, I don't know. But it just doesn't happen like that. They don't go through this rewriting until it's perfect, and then they go into production. They go through, here's a script, let's go into production, oh shit, it's not working well, in the edit. And then they try and fix it. That's why there's reshoots and stuff like that. But we can also like agree that Parks and Rec more than likely is functionally better written. right? Yes. It's got better characters. It's got better things yeah. like that. But they build that over time. So it's really unfair to compare a show to a film in that way. Because
right,
because
the mean, show has because, time to...
And Amanda and I laughed at this film. We liked this film. And Brian, you yeah. didn't. So we're just not going to fundamentally agree
right,
whether
no, there's no way that I can convince you that it's unfunny because it's already made you laugh. I mean,
exactly.
I can't take that back.
Yeah.
The only point that I wanted to get across was that the laziness of the plotting and the narrative and the story made the lack of humor that I found even more unbearable.
Sure. And that those small flaws to us because it
not
made
small
us
flaws,
laugh.
Bill.
Hold on.
Okay,
I said to
on,
us. I said to us, right, because they are small flaws to us because the film served its function in making us laugh.
Right.
Right. Yep. And so they,
we've already gone over this argument
yes.
many times. here's the last thing I'm going to say. So as I was leaving the theater, there were a couple little boys who just watched the film and I overheard them say to their parents, yeah, it was awesome. Oh, it was so cool. And I just started thinking how funny it would be if 30 years from now, they announced a new Ghostbusters reboot.
With males?
With males. And these kids were like, male Ghostbusters? No, thanks. This is just a men's activist movie.
I mean, I don't doubt that there will be.
I'm just saying, I just was like a thought I had, just how funny that would be.
Universal did this, right? Am I?
No, it's Columbia.
Sony and Columbia. I mean, they've said they want this to be a universe.
Like, yeah, they want to make more
they
movies.
They want the Ghostbusters film, they said, to be endless.
Yes,
so they
yes.
could do, like, Ghostbusters Shanghai, Ghostbusters Dublin, Ghostbusters Namibia, you know, Ghostbusters Kenya meets Ghostbusters Australia. Like,
it's funny that you say Australia, because I think some of this film was actually shot in Australia, which
yes.
is really strange.
I don't think a single frame of this was shot in New York, except for the
yes,
plates and the aerial shots, obviously.
Well, yeah. surely they shot ladder engine ladder 8 over there, right?
Oh, perhaps.
Like, come
I don't know.
Come
I don't know.
Like, hopefully. Is that,
okay,
that thing
so
actually...
The last thing I'm going to say is that the ending of this movie where they show all the buildings lit up, just why?
Yeah, that's
another function of the original film. Where
that was whatever
they,
about it.
They basically
I was going to ask something, but then I remember we already talked about it.
There could have been some stuff cut out of it. That being one of,
I actually like that. I got a little emotional. I don't know.
Oh, Bill.
I don't know. That whole like thing where like the mayor was constantly like, we know it's real, but we got to pretend like it's not.
Mayor Andy Garcia.
Oh, who had the best line. This will be the last thing I say. The best line in this movie is him like freaking out and being like, don't compare me to the mayor from Jaws. Because it's like he says it in such a way where it's like, you know that as a mayor, he probably gets that line all the time and he's sick of it.
I love Excellent. That line. That is
but
a great line.
Actually, that's another thing. Like, what was up with Kristen Wiig just like going in there, freaking out, and then running down the street, like throwing her clothes at cars, screaming for everyone.
That was
to
a
leave.
Tablecloth.
Oh,
it
was
a tablecloth.
Yeah,
that was the tablecloth that she drug out of the restaurant.
And I was like, I hope it's not cold. Jesus.
Yeah, no. No. Well, I mean, she's literally at her wit's end. She doesn't know what to do, and she's just trying to get people to evacuate.
She's in Kristen Wiig mode.
But I like the scene at the end where they light up the and they basically give them like respect, because the entire film is nobody fucking believes them. Every time they go into a place,
a lot of people believe them. I mean, people are calling them and cheering them on, and I mean, like, they're surrounded by that club and the people are like, fuck yeah, Ghostbusters.
Of course they are, because an entire club just witnessed it. But
all those people are on Molly.
Oh, that's a good point. Well, they're metalheads. I don't know if they're on Molly. They're probably on crystal.
Do metalheads do Molly? Oh yeah, you're right.
So yeah.
Can I just say that Aussie thing?
Oh,
nope.
God.
Nope. Absolutely not. If they had Danzig as the band, if they had Danzig as a band in this movie, I would have lost my mind.
Yeah,
the cameos in this film are pretty damn atrocious.
Oh,
like, I'll just say that overall.
No, I thought. Well, I just say there was a point in my notes where I just wrote Toby Huss, Michael K. Williams, Andy Garcia. Like, I just kept listing everybody as the Annie Potts.
How do you kill Bill Murray and then not have a hilarious shot of Bill Murray's corpse?
Oh, that Bill Murray thing was so unnecessary.
Yeah, I kept expecting...
That's what I'm talking about.
I literally kept expecting them to cut to his corpse and for him to be like... I don't... Just like a funny corpse. Does anyone understand what I'm talking about?
All those good funny corpses.
Well, here's the thing. Bill Murray played a funny corpse
Zombie
in
Land?
Parks and Recreation. Written and produced by Kate DePold.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he actually got a laugh from me just because they had a quick shot to his corpse during someone's speech about him during his funeral.
Oh, in that show.
So I was expecting, like, what if we cut to Bill Murray and, like, I don't know, he's, like, sitting in a special way. I mean, I'm not a comedy person, obviously, so I can't write this, but hopefully someone would be able to do something funny with Bill Murray's corpse.
Did the wonton thing land with y'all?
Oh, God, no.
Not really,
I liked it.
Oh, Bill.
I wasn't a good running gag.
Somewhat easy to please.
You like Chinese food running gags, Bill?
That's a damn lie.
This is true.
I'm surprised that you're like, how could this Chinese food restaurant constantly screw up? Like, don't they have Yelp reviews? Like, don't they know what they're doing? Like, how are they still in business?
Because they're just fucking with one lady. That's it.
Is it like just
every
one lady?
I think everybody
whose bike they destroyed. Did they pay for
delivery
his bike?
Guy?
Yeah, I don't know. But I like my running theory is that he keeps fucking with her, and
because he likes
like,
her. Oh my god, are we gonna get a romance in the next movie?
Oh god, no, not
a extended universe.
Just because he likes fucking with her. And she's probably got
weird
things on her head.
We're gonna get a Dark Horse comic one shot that's like him and her like in love, and then it turns out it's just a dream he's having.
You know, I'm okay with that because I didn't get my Brienne and Tormund romance this season.
Not yet.
All right. Well, guys, it's been real. The real Ghostbusters.
It's been
get
a
shit out of here, and let's tell the people where we can be found at home. We will be having a roundtable either this week or next, depending on timing. So that is something to look forward to.
Woo.
Meanwhile, remember to find us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. Search for The Film Stage Show. Email us podcast@thefilmstage.com. Give us a comment and rating on iTunes. Bill Graham, where can we find you between now and next time?
On the internet at CableBFG on Twitter. And you can also find me writing reviews and doing interviews at The Film Stage and RestFiction.tv.
All right, Amanda Waltz, what about yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah, get that Ghostbusters 2 in. You can find me on Twitter at Media Waltz. You can also find me on Letterboxd, Media Waltz. Media Waltz? Goodness. Media Waltz. Yeah, that's it.
All right, and you can find me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. You can find my reviews of numerous movies on filmstage.com. And, yeah, that's about it. You know, search Brian J. Rowan online, you'll probably find me. Because, again, that's just what all of my goddamn screen names are. In fact, that's what I made my Pokemon Go screen name.
Oh, man.
No one's going to take a shot at me for Pokemon Go?
No, absolutely not.
All right, great. So that's it for today, ladies and gentlemen. Join us next week. We'll be talking about something, probably. Not quite sure what it is yet. Thank you once again, and we'll see you soon.